Hey, this is AKM from Dallas Fuel, and you're listening to The Centering.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello and welcome to another edition of The Centering, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports radio show. Episode 116, if you're counting off-air shows. Or number 4, if you're only counting ticket appearances. Coming to you live from Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket. Hello. The date, August 1st, the time, 7:09 p.m. Central Standard Time. My name is Tim Kay. You might recognize me as extraordinary producer of Dallas's number one soccer show, 2 to 4, every Saturday, The Kick Around. Hello. Alongside me, though, are two gentlemen you may not know. We have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
How you guys doing?
Also known as Anawaje. And we have Brett. Hello, Brett.
What's up, guys?
Hello. We are The Centering. We are an esports show, typically in podcast form. You can find us on Twitter at The Centering. Keep up with all the news there, any new episodes, anything like that that interests you. At The Centering on Twitter. Go and follow it. Ask us questions. We are doing a Twitter segment later on in the show, so your participation is dire for this professional esports broadcast. It depends on you, the listener. But this is going to be the best episode ever. Not only because we are live on The Ticket, which I feel like is always our best form, if I have to say so myself. We have e-news to end the show. That's also where we're going to throw in the Twitter segment. We're going to talk how the Overwatch League impacted the grand spectrum of esports, right? What future impact is the Overwatch League going to have? This is an Overwatch League intense show, by the way. We're going to, at 8:10, look back at the Overwatch League Season 1, talk about some meta changes, what kind of surprised us, teams that made the playoffs, teams that didn't make the playoffs. At 7:50, though, we will derail a little bit from Overwatch League, talk some CSGO. They do have a major coming up in a month, give or take. So we will do a quick little preview, a preview of a big preview, if you want to call it that, at 7:50. The only reason we're doing this is at 7:30, I will talk about my trip to New York. I did go to the Overwatch League finals, and Blizzard and the league was kind enough to host the show, so I was the chosen one and went to go do that. So I will talk about New York, my trip there, the in-person experience watching it. We will definitely talk about that at 7:30. But for right now, I do want to talk about the Overwatch League finals, the actual London versus Philadelphia. But before that, I do want to explain to the ticket listener that may not have realized that this is not the Ticket Top 10 yet and haven't turned off the station. First off, I appreciate you. Second off, I always feel, you know, we don't always have our normal audience when we do a show on the Ticket, rightfully so. Esports is not, it's not mainstream yet, so I always like to give a little explanation of what it is.
What a guy.
I'm a man of the people, Brett. So for those who don't
courage.
Know, esports is in its most true form, and you guys can feel free to jump in, is competitive gaming, right? It's like any other sport you might watch. You know, think of your favorite game. If there's a multiplayer aspect to it, chances are there is a competitive scene to it, and if it's lucky enough, it can blossom into its full-grown esports self and have fan bases and prize pools and tournaments.
Turns into a billion-dollar industry.
Exactly. Now, not every multiplayer game, not every game is fortunate like that, and that's okay, right? There was a time in life where we did play video games just for fun. You know, not every game had to have an esports to it.
Games are supposed to be fun.
That's what they tell me anyways. I can't remember the last time I did that. But in short, that's what esports is. Whether or not you want to argue if it's a real sport, are the players athletes? To be honest, I don't care. That's not really part of the reasons why I enjoy it, because I think it might be a real sport, or are they athletes or not. To be honest, I think the only people who care about that stuff are the people who aren't even in the target demographic for it anyways. Yeah. Like, the people arguing that, they're not trying to convince you.
And we've even been on record saying that, you know, the Olympics is going to have an esports as aspect of it now. And we're like, this is stupid. Nobody wanted this. Like, nobody's arguing that fact.
No.
There's a big enough audience out there where you don't really have to convince people to like it anymore, right? You either like it, you don't. It is what it is. But there's a huge audience out there that does love it, that enjoys it, likes listening to it. It's why we do what we do.
And I do implore you, anyone who might be interested, right? If you play video games especially, you can maybe watch one game. All right, let's take two completely opposite games. You have Dota 2 and Counter-Strike Go. All right, two completely different games. One is a MOBA, one's an FPS. They're both esports. You might not like one or the other, and that's okay. Like, you don't like people who like normal sports, traditional sports, right? You have the biggest football fan, but then they can't stand soccer. Like, it's the same thing. Like, people are always like, oh, I don't like esports. Those are dumb. Well, what game do you play? Well, I play Fortnite. Okay, well, have you ever watched professionals play Fortnite? Because you might actually enjoy it because it's something you're interested in. So my case here is you can give it a shot or not. We're here if you have any questions. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's okay. If it's not your thing.
Sure. Tim K. PSA.
I feel like I always have to say it, because immediately I can tell you what's happening right now. There's someone going on the ticket subreddit saying, why is this on air? And there's someone going to the tickets Twitter saying, who are these clowns talking about video games on a sports radio station?
Tim K.
The same sports radio station that also talks about Dancing with the Stars and had a music show once upon a time. I think we even did a Big Brother show. But hey, esports is the ridiculous part of all that. So that's my case. That's me introducing esports to the non-esports fan. For the esports fan, though, one of the biggest events, I think, most anticipated and of the year. I know it's only August 1st, but I think it's safe to say this was one of the bigger events that's going to be for this year.
It was really hyped up.
Yes.
There was a lot put into this.
Overwatch League Season 1. The regular season started in January, and the grand finals just happened. It was London Spitfire versus the Philadelphia Fusion. Two teams, once the season kind of matured, weren't really expected to be in the finals, and yet here we are.
Yeah, I mean, especially Philly, because, you know, I mean, they had a rough go at the beginning, and you know, we'll get in this talk later in the show when we talk about meta changes, but a big part of Philly making it to the finals was the big stage four meta change really helped them out. But you look on the flip side with London, they were 4-6 in that new meta stage four, so they were going into it not so hot. So I mean, it was both sides.
And I think one of the beauties, though, or maybe it's not, for better or for worse, Blizzard ended up implementing a new patch going into the playoffs, which completely shifted how the meta was going to be played. I think at the end of the day, going into the finals, I know I predicted it, but that's also because I'm a genius. I picked London Spitfire to win, and they really, apart from game one, which was the only game Philly won, and kind of looked like they were going to stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that first map, it was literally the first map of the finals. Philadelphia won, and everyone thought, oh, we got ourselves a game. And then London was like, no.
And that was a map that they beat NYXL on, who was the number one team or number one seed going into the tournament. And they had just played them the series before, had beat them. You're like, oh gosh, they're going to carry over here. And there's a chance that they just run the table and carry that momentum. But yeah, like you mentioned, it was a dead halt after that game, and there wasn't much else to look forward to for them.
It was like London looked at themselves and they were like, hey, guys, the game plan. Let's get back to this. And after, like, more to your point, Tim, after that first map, it was game on. And you saw it. A big part of what they were doing was picking on Carpe, which Carpe is the hotshot DPS player for Philly, their best player by far, just a highlight machine. Their goal, hey, we're not going to even use our tanks. We're going to use our best DPS player to go and chase you down the entire match. You are not going to be comfortable on Widow this entire game. And after they did that, it was over. You could just see Carpe couldn't get anything done. I mean, he had a couple of team fights where, you know, he showed out. But after that first map, it was, let's chase this guy around. Let's get him uncomfortable. Let's get him out of his game. And they did that, and it was awesome.
That was a big storyline going into the finals, too, where it was going to be the DPS Carpe versus Prophet. You know, so Carpe's on Philadelphia Fusion, Prophet is on London Spitfire, both one of the top five DPS, and DPS is damaged, right?
Yeah.
They play the Widows, the Genjis, right? They're the flashy players. They're the wide receiver of the team, if you want to use that analogy. And it's funny because you are correct. London completely shut down Carpe. In fact, on day two, I believe, what was the first map of day two?
It was Junkertown.
Junkertown is where Carpe... Junkertown's a huge Widow map.
Yeah.
Huge Widow map. They ended up... London Spitfire ended up forcing Carpe to move on to Tracer, and I think right there, I knew he was not feeling it.
You're not comfortable at that point.
Exactly, yeah. When you're switching off what is supposed to be your top hero, and typically in Overwatch, like... if there's another Widow on the other team, you have to have that other pro Widow to counter it because it's potentially a one-shot kill.
Yeah.
And so when he switched, that's when I knew Carpe lost the DPS fight.
Yeah, you have to have another Widow, and if you don't have another Widow, you need your tanks to also chase her down. You know, mobile tanks, which they had. And we'll get to this later about the tanks that had a rough go for Philly. Nobody was helping Carpe out in that regard, which would tilt anybody into switching.
It wasn't until the second half of day two, of the first match in day two, where, like on King's Row, which they ended up losing, right? But they took it 4-3, and they got the third point in overtime. But
yeah, they.
Besides that, right? Besides the fact that they lost, which is only a minor detail.
Yeah, right.
But that's where you finally saw Philadelphia like click, and it was just too late at that point. London has all the momentum in the world, and finally on the second half of the final match, Carpe is looking like what everyone thought he was going to be. I think he got like a triple kill with Widow on King's Row, but then again,
it still wasn't enough.
It's too late.
Yeah,
it's too late.
Yeah, it was. I mean, on that map, they had to push pretty much the entire third push while in overtime to get to that point. But then London, like they've done this entire playoffs, they've only dropped two maps this entire playoffs, punched them in the mouth and still had time on the clock, which, you know, those that watch Overwatch, if one team gets the last point in overtime and you still have time in your bank when you attack, all you have to do is take that one tick. In overtime, which, you know, gave them the 4-3 lead. So after they still had time in the bank, you could just tell, like, yeah, we had to be awesome on this third and last push, but it just wasn't enough to get them over.
Did it almost seem like Philadelphia on King's Row on the final point where London all had to do is get one tick?
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched the VOD a few times. It almost looks like Philly didn't know that either no one was on that first point only, or they only needed one tick. Like, they were still playing like they had, you know, all the time in the world, or like to defend the payload all the way to the end.
You're talking about the very last point, right?
The very last point.
I don't know if it threw them off or not, but on that last point, you had the LA Gladiators play, is essentially what they did. Because
they rotate,
left one in spawn.
You leave the Widow in the spawn
on
King's Row, which basically gives you a sniper's nest.
And you saw them run that play that worked against them. And I don't know if maybe that's what threw Philly off, to see them going for the high ground and do that long rotation. But there's a little bit of cockiness there in London to really pull that out in that moment to win it.
And that same group, that same six players that they took that final tick to take that map, that's what they had to do because, you know, we didn't even talk about this. There was a moment in King's Row where I thought myself that London wasn't even going to get the first point.
No.
Because they took it, you know, with a minute
Philly
28
left. Philly had a really good hold on that first, the first payload.
And then, you know, London switches to what you guys were talking about, the slambulance, you know, where you have three support, you have three tanks, and let's just go at this. You know, they didn't have an answer for it.
Once they took out Philly's tank there at the end, that was it. That was game time. You knew they were going to end it right there.
Yeah.
It was just for a moment where you knew all they had to get one tick on that first point and then it was over. You still had there was three Philly players literally in jumping distance to get on there to delay. And it just, I felt like they almost like had a brain lapse. Like they didn't know that it was about to be over. But I will want to give one shout out here as we're running short on time. Because we talked a lot about DPS, which, albeit they are the flashy plays, they will get MVP, right? It's just
always
it's how it works.
Yeah.
But the true saving grace, and if you had to make an MVP push to someone other than a damaged player in this finals, you would have to give it to Jester on London Spitfire. So he's a tank, and if I always have to relate it to traditional sports, I'm okay with that. Think of a tank as a lineman, an offensive lineman. They don't get as much of the glory, but they're the ones creating the holes. They're creating the space for that running back to get through and make the cool play.
They have they have the biggest job. I mean, they're you know, creating those holes, but they're also keeping their support upright. You know, they have to be in that to be able to be mobile, protect the support players, you know, get the damage in as well. You know, Jester's the Winston player, which, you know, with his ability, he has the weapon that does damage kind of like an AOE. So he's kind of in the middle of things and just doing work. And you saw him lighting up
to his credit,
the kill feed.
In a meta where a lot of people were saying Winston was going to be irrelevant,
and
you know?
He was awesome on it. It was great. And you didn't see that from the Philly side. Sato, who is one of the best tank players in the league, he was just shut out. Never saw him on the kill feed, but
you
always saw Jester.
Not talk about like the tanks, though, right? If you want to just say from a high overview, you didn't see adjustments in general on Philly.
Yeah, I mean, there was one point on Junkertown day two where Profit, the finals MVP, gets a 5K, a 5-kill ultimate, and then immediately, because Philly switched to a Genji, immediately after that 5K switches to Brigetta to counter the Genji. So, I mean, I guess you can give it to Profit because he was that flexible player that they needed in this new meta. But I'm with you, Tim. Jester is a very close 2B, or 1B, rather.
Yeah, it's just... like I said, you won't see their name up in the kill feed nearly as much, but they do play a big part.
You saw Philly try to make some adjustments that just got shut down real quick when they were playing, like, what was it, Volskaya Industries. They started off with the three tanks to start that off, and then they got swept out by Profit, who popped his Dragon Strike and kind of ruined both their pushes back-to-back. And it's like, if they did try something, it just wasn't going anywhere.
It was an awesome finals. I mean, by both teams... and London, I think, had a well-deserved victory. Again, we are the Center Ring. We are an esports show, typically in podcast form, but we do appear on The Ticket. You can follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. Hit us up with questions or thoughts. We are doing a Twitter segment at the end of the show at 8:50. Up next, though, I was in person at the Overwatch League Grand Finals, and we'll talk about that next on The Ticket.
Esports takes center stage in the Center Ring. It's our Thursday night F around with Tim Kaye and his merry band of gamers on Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket.
Don't miss legendary blues rock musician Delbert McClinton this Friday, August 3rd, at the theater at Grand Prairie, formerly Verizon Theater, with Joe Ely Band and Casey James. Get Delbert McClinton tickets at AXS.com. For a chance to win a pair of tickets, text Delbert to 22126. Welcome back to the Center Ring here on Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket. We are an esports show, so for those tuning in expecting the top 10, my apologies. Matt is so nice to let us steal his time slot. And we're talking esports. If you have any questions or interests, let us know at The Center Ring on Twitter. Be sure to follow, like, retweet, whatever the kids are doing now on social media to stay in touch. Last segment, we just talked about the Overwatch League Grand Finals, about the actual gameplay, London Spitfire winning a clean sweep. Is that a clean sweep, even though Philly won one game? Do we call it a clean sweep?
Well, I mean, with a best of three, it's kind of hard to call it a clean sweep. Let's just say they dominated.
It's just two
wins. There you go. Okay. I don't know.
They did dominate, though. So London Spitfire ended up winning that. But I was there, and I want to talk about my trip to New York, if you guys don't mind. So the league and Blizzard were nice enough to contact us to see if we wanted to go. And of course, you're going to say yes to that. Like, you're going to move things around to go if the league is inviting you out to New York.
And Brett and I were so pumped. We were so excited to go. I was actually thrilled booking my tickets.
Yeah.
You know, getting ready. You know, and then what happened, Tim?
Yeah, what happened, Tim?
There was only room for one.
Sad.
only room for one, and, well, you know, the T in the center ring doesn't stand for the, if you know what I mean. So I ended up going to watch the grand finals in person in New York. I have never been to New York, so it was a double exciting trip for me.
Just Tim in the big city.
I felt like I was in my element.
Yeah.
New York, it speaks to me. First off, I'll talk about the event here in a minute, but I do want to talk about the city. The stereotype of angry New Yorker man, it's a bit overblown. I felt like the people there were nice. They were friendly. Mm-hmm. They said thank you. I felt like it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, we have this misconception. Man, words are hard. You know, we live here where everyone holds the door open for you and everyone tries to out-polite you. And, you know, you go to another place and it's like a culture shock. But I'm glad you had a good experience, Tim.
I mean, it really was. Like, everyone was nice. Now, I will say, like, you don't stop and say hi to everyone, right? But I feel like that's any downtown setting.
Hi.
Like, I feel like that's just the normal thing. What I will miss is the convenience of food. Everywhere. Everywhere. You just could pick
every corner. There is either a bagel shop, pizza shop.
Pick a direction.
Gyros, doesn't matter.
And there's something to do, something to see, and something to eat. So it was great. Lots of walking, though. The first night I was there, our buddy Donut. Yes, his name is Donut.
By birth.
Met me up there, and he kind of took me around Brooklyn. We went to Chinatown, walked from Chinatown to Times Square. It was like 10 miles. I was exhausted. It was raining, but it was great. And I never once felt like I was going to get stabbed. Like, you always hear, like, oh, you got to watch out for the dark alleyways of New York City. There's no alleyways.
What was your favorite part?
Like, favorite
outside of the esports events that you
like just like visually going to see, you know, and this is going to sound really cheesy and SG of me. The 9/11 memorial was pretty surreal.
No, that really is incredible. Like, the way they've done that area.
Paul in
without ever being there, I was taken back by thinking at one point in time there were just two normal skyscrapers there, and to think, you know, I've only seen it on TV. I remember getting pulled out of school on 9/11 and just trying to put myself there that day. I was like, this is nuts.
Pretty impactful stuff when you're there.
Yeah, it is. Like, for sure. You really, like, everyone is respectful there. It's weird. It's like everyone knows, like, what that's for.
Yeah.
So it's that I felt like was pretty darn cool. That's where I was like, okay, I'm in New York, right?
What was your favorite part of all the free stuff you got over the weekend from an esports side?
Yeah, I did. Look, Blizzard treats you right. It was a very bougie trip, if I do say so myself. So I get there, and Day one, nothing's going on. I get there on Wednesday. Nothing's going on, so that's when we go see the city in Manhattan and all that. Thursday is media day. So you go, you speak to the commissioner, the owners, the players, everything like that. And that was cool. You know, we've been to esports events, so you guys kind of are familiar with how it works. It's like any other sporting event. You just go and talk to the players. And that was cool. We had dinner, like a special invite dinner. So they ended up, basically what it was is Blizzard wanted to branch out to cities and traditional media. So like radio. No one's told them yet that radio is dying, so.
They don't know.
They don't need to know either.
They had newspaper columnists coming in too.
We are huge still. Radio is on the rise.
A Cumulus station.
And so they treat us to dinner right by Brooklyn Bridge. You saw the Statue of Liberty. It was great. That's where it's like Ruckus was sitting at my table. So we got to talk to him, who plays for the Houston Outlaws. So the dinner was great. It was at a very fancy place. And there was like five courses, like where they just bring out, you know, like, hey, here's the salad. Here's.
There is no
steak.
Way you knew what to do with
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, there's no bass. Way. I'm calling you.
So, but the first thing is like sea bass. All right. I don't eat seafood and I don't drink.
Oh, but sea bass is so good.
Well,
you're so uncultured.
Exactly. Well, I even told awesome the PR guy, I'm like, bro, you could have just brought like
chicken fingers.
Yeah, like just bring some pizza or something. Like you did not have to do all this to impress me. I'm a cheap date.
Nachos.
So I get the sea bass and I'm like, well, I can't just let this probably like $80 fish sit in front of me.
There are people looking at you and judging you.
So I did. I ate it.
Did you not enjoy it?
Oh, it was awful.
Oh my gosh.
It was, and you know what is funny is I bet you like for people who are into seafood, it was like.
It's my wife's favorite meal, just so you know. No. Like sea bass is her favorite
dish.
This
is the guy representing us in New York. Yeah.
No, it was bad.
We sent this uncultural Texan
but
dude
the dinner
to go
was great.
Out there in New York.
Overall, the dinner was great. Friday and Saturday were the matches. So this was at the Barclays Center. So this was like no disrespect to the theater at Grand Prairie now, where ESL Dallas is held every year. Awesome venue, perfect venue for esports out in Grand Prairie. But it doesn't hold 20,000 people like the Barclays Center did. Completely sold out, 20,000 in the arena. The media seats were on the floor, smack dab in the middle. So you just got to experience
everything
going around you. I've been to a lot of events, whether it be esports. I've been to a Counter-Strike major. I flew up to Columbus to go see the very first ever major in North America. Been to ESL Dallas, DreamHack. You know, I've been to a lot of traditional sports events. Nothing like this one. This was insane when it came to down to the production value within the stadium, the way it was ran, their PR staff was. You would not expect this to be their first time ever doing something on this scale, right? Like, they've done esports before, but you would have thought this was a professionally ran league.
But well, Blizzard also knows how to put on a show, right? They've never done a bad job at BlizzCon or like any of the other major events that they've done. Like, Blizzard is known to do. Go big, right? They go big or go home type
the
thing.
The screen was, it literally stretched from one end of the stadium to the other. Huge. Like, it had to have been bigger than.
Don't say it.
Oh.
Don't say it.
Those are fighting words.
Than Jerry's World.
Oh, man.
It had to have been. Unless maybe you're just closer. But being that close.
The new stadium.
Definitely felt bigger. And so the way they had it is the game was in the middle. And then you had both teams on the left and right. And then as like a player would die, they would have like a timer and, you know, things there. The one thing I wish they had, you have all that video space, no stats whatsoever. And I'm a stats guy. And I just wish you saw something. Give me something to go off.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's chaotic. It's a chaotic game where just stuff is happening and it's hard to kind of keep pace and you don't know who's doing
well and
sometimes, you know, and it's nice to see, you know.
Carpe rips off a quad kill and you think he's the best player in the match and then you realize like, oh, those are his only kills.
Did they not have the stats like even like where the players were sitting in front of them or anything?
Nowhere.
So there was no visual for like statistics
anywhere.
That's interesting.
Yeah, which has kind of always been their woe throughout the season.
Yeah.
It's just the stats are not there yet. I don't know why, because clearly the talent, you know, the play-by-play guys have him because they talk about it.
Yeah.
But overall, I loved New York. I survived the subway.
Good job, man.
So it wasn't until day two I decided to try to get on a subway. I was like, I cannot spend another $20 on Uber. So our buddy Donut, you know, bless his heart, doesn't really realize that the closest thing we have to public transportation Dallas is like three buses downtown. Yeah. That's all we got to get around the city. And so he's like, oh, yeah, you got to go to Manhattan?
Yeah, just take the C train to Manhattan.
Yeah, what you do is you get on the A, you take that to the C, then you go southwest, you get on the 2, make sure you get to the 4, but don't get off in Harlem. And I'm like, I don't know what any of
it's
that
like, so
means.
Wait, how do I get to the station?
Yeah. It was like, I'm like, I don't think you understand. And I have an innate fear of looking like a tourist to begin with. I hate looking like a tourist. I just don't, it's out of my element. I don't like it. And so to get on the subway, it was stressful. I was sweating, but I survived. It was an awesome event. I assume they're going to switch it around each year. If it ever makes its way to Dallas, which it easily could, I would recommend anyone going. Even if there were media there that had no idea what Overwatch League was, and they said it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this event was awesome, you know, filling 20,000 people in a sports stadium. But, I mean, just think of what it could be, right? You know, they had sold out early, and, I mean, they could have sold more tickets. Like, seeing this event in maybe like a... You know,
but I mean,
these ticket prices were going for like $150+
and
for some of these.
Fast.
Like,
damn.
Yeah. So I mean, it wasn't like a giveaway where they just gave away 10,000 out of the 20,000 tickets.
No.
They legit sold this place out.
So speaking of big events, there's one for Counter-Strike coming up here in about a month in London. We are talking about the CS:GO major next on the ticket.
You're listening to another Thursday Night F Around, or E Around, as it were, because we're talking eSports on Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket.
That's correct. We are talking eSports here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring, eSports podcast, occasional radio show. You can follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. I am Tim Kay. Normally with the kick around, fill in host on the weekends if you're part of the weekend crowd. Alongside me, though, as always, we have Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
I'm doing well, man. Better than Urban Meyer today.
I think a lot of us are. And we have Brett. Hello, Brett.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And then, of course, running the board and doing those tickers, we have Matt. Hello, Matt.
Gentlemen, how's it going?
Hello.
What a great radio voice, man.
He's a pro, man.
Yeah.
I know. Tim sounds great.
He is a pro. I do not have a radio voice, but...
Or if you have the bass, though.
I'll tell you guys how Matt got that job during the break.
Not like that.
We are The Center Ring once again, at The Center Ring on Twitter if you'd like to follow us. Ask us eSports questions coming up at 8:50 in 1 hour. In fact, we are going to do a Twitter question segment, so feel free to ask us anything in there.
Be gentle.
Keep League of Legends out of it. You just won't get anything. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's like, it would be like the hard line talk in soccer. We might be able to get through it, but we'll leave it to the professionals like the kick around. Primarily in this show, we are recapping Overwatch League Season 1. I was at the finals. We talked about it last segment. Coming up next, we are talking, what are we talking about next?
Counter-Strike, man.
No. That's now.
Sports.
Up next, we are looking back at the Overwatch League Season 1 at 8:10. But right now, we are going to divert from Overwatch talk because in about a month, one of the biggest tournaments in esports, again, a lot of biggest tournaments in esports, depending on who you're asking.
But this is generally one of the bigger events of the year in esports.
So Counter-Strike is having one of their majors in London next month. It's the Face It major for London. There's really only two of these a year, which kind of just happened to be that way. Sometimes you would get three in 1 year, but it seems like they only do two now.
Yeah.
Valve is the official. These are official Valve-hosted tournaments. This is pretty much when you want to say you are the best team in the world type of major, right? Like, if you want to put this on a scale, that's what it is. And there's, you know, I think there's a lot of storylines going into this major, as far as, I mean, even if you're just looking at the legendary spots, right? You have, let me get my notes.
Well, the reigning champions, yeah, Cloud9.
What it is with the legend spots are the top eight teams from last year, or from the last major, which was in January in Boston, automatically qualify for this one.
Yep.
So you will see some teams that, you know, 7 months ago were good, but a lot can change in Counter-Strike. And 7 months in Counter-Strike is probably like 4 years worth of any other normal sport.
That's fair.
When you think of like a team cycle, you typically get 4 years out of that roster. 7 months is...
It's like the trade deadline in Counter-Strike happens 4 times a year somehow.
Right.
Like, it's that kind of craziness where rosters are swapped, shuffled, replaced. Yeah. I mean...
And I'm looking at four of the Legends teams, and four of those teams, the rosters have been kind of turned on their heads since the last major, right? So,
well, you have the former champion, Cloud9. They are a shell of their former team that won the Boston Major. The majority of them moved over to MIBR.
No team has the same starting five, except for possibly Windstrike, but Cloud9 does not. FaZe, I guess, now that Olaf is back, maybe they will have their five if he remains there. But Navi's changed, you know, Snacks on Mouse Sports. Obviously, you just mentioned MIBR.
MIBR hiring Yanko today as a head coach, yep, which is huge in the Counter-Strike world. Mouse Sports, G2, now we're getting into the teams that are like,
G2
up.
Would be totally different had they not had the Legend spot.
G2 would not be in the major had they not had this. Like, I fully would expect them not to qualify for the major had they not have the automatic invite.
Well, yeah, and same with Windstrike, who was Quantum Bellator. Those guys were like,
I mean, they were surprised,
100-1 odds to even get to the point that they're at.
And here they are.
Yeah.
Now, this is the second major where they're doing their new format. Last major was super confusing, and it kind of took some of the fun out of it, because they basically increased the pool for teams that could be considered qualified for the major.
It went from 16 to 24, so they added 8 additional teams. Those 8 spots used to be part of an offline event that took place to make it to the major. They've now just included them or incorporated them into the big event, and more money kind of all around for everybody. The way that Counter-Strike does it is if you make the major, there's in-game prizes for those teams.
And that's the motivation.
Yeah, so yeah, this is a way for them to make money, a little bit more.
And you also have the Swiss format coming back for the major, which seems to be Valve's favorite format for a major. When it first came out, I really did enjoy it. Like, I remember thinking, this is the way tournaments should be ran, not your normal group stage or however you want to do it, right?
Yeah.
So for the Swiss format, for those unfamiliar, because you really don't see it in any sport,
yeah,
right?
No, like, I don't think this is the only sport that
the first
I can
time I've ever heard of it,
yeah,
was through Counter-Strike.
Yeah, because before they were doing it like you would like watch the World Cup.
Yeah,
right?
You had your
so
groups.
You had your groups, yeah.
So the Swiss format is in pool play, which is the first round of play. Okay, Legend teams, again, top 8 from previous, are not in this. They get a first round bye,
yep,
if you will. Then so Swiss format comes into play where it's completely random on who you're going to play. You could play... The first seed could play the second seed. They could play the last seed. It's a name out of a hat. That's how they're picking up their bracket.
Literally, a name out of a hat.
Yeah, that's seriously how they... It's like a lottery ball is how they
pick
it.
The important thing is no seeding there.
There's no seeding. And then winner plays winner, loser plays loser, so on and so forth.
So if you're 2-0 in the Swiss format, you're playing another team that's also 2-0.
Yeah, they're keeping the best. I think the idea behind this is you're constantly having the best competition throughout the tournament,
which
arguably so.
People, you know, having different opinions on that, just because like you said, you could have,
that's where you get like Quantum qualifying, right? Because
yeah,
you can be a subpar team, get really lucky with the lottery ball,
yeah,
and have a very weak
run to making it.
Yeah,
through
to the finals. Yeah, or yeah, you could be, I can't remember it off
you
the
really
top
of my head. You really have to win one or two really good games to get in, but you can like squeak by maybe three or four easier
like
matches.
One team
in the
last major, was it Astralis that had like a
it was Liquid, I think. Right?
A top tier team had a ridiculous road to the finals. Like they got every top tier team drawn against them, and it was like, well, this is kind of ridiculous that we're now having a tier two team in the major top eight compared to some of these teams that failed. And it's all because of this Swiss format, which, like I said, for better or for worse, you can get Cinderella stories, but no one wants to see Cinderella in the finals.
And I'm like you, Tim. When it first came out, I was like, man, this is exciting. You know, it's something different, fresh, you know, whatever, you know, because seeding in Counter-Strike is super hard. I mean, if you're looking at the top, you know, you know your top teams, but once you get to, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, those are a little bit harder to seed because it's constantly changing, right? Yeah. But I'm kind of with you guys. I would rather more see like a group type setting rather
which
than
which it goes to once it hits the actual playoffs, right? Like once they advance past those group stages, it goes.
No, so I think that's one of the things that they're doing different for this one is even after that, it's going into like a second reshuffled Swiss format with the top eight, with the legends and, you know, the top eight teams that have qualified again.
Okay.
So they're going back to back Swiss.
So just
formats.
Running Swiss and then running Swiss.
And
again.
Then when it gets to top eight, it goes to bracket play.
Where you'll generally see the better teams kind of overcome at that point.
Yeah, because better teams
win best out of threes.
Yeah, they win best out of threes. Yeah. That's the whole point of them. Because that's another thing with the Swiss format is they're all best of ones. Unless it's like the tiebreakers or anything now.
Which nobody likes. If you follow the pros, they none of them like it.
Well, no, so. Because everyone knows in Counter-Strike, it's a game of two sides. You know, if you're starting on terrorist or counter-terrorist could make, I mean, a difference of 12 rounds to start off with.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you're on a map that's CT-sided, counter-terrorist-sided, and, you know, you're down, you know, five rounds going into the next, you know, half. I mean, your motivation's, I mean, it's kind of shot at that point. It's like you don't have another map to kind of lean on after that.
I think they want this ultimately, though, because it does cause drama. It causes a lot of upsets. There's a, you know, always a random team that kind of finds a way to push through. So I think they do it for a reason, but it's not the most liked or well-received amongst everybody for sure.
So if we have to make very super early predictions, and you know, I will even say, so we're going to do like a massive major preview on a future episode of the podcast version of this show. So be sure and follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. We do occasional shows like this on The Ticket when, you know, a big event ends or previews or things like that. So we'll do like a full on preview because the roster lock for the major is like this weekend, like August 5th, I think, is the roster lock. So these rosters could still
shuffle
change
a bit.
In a way. I mean, Cloud9 is one of those rosters where a lot of people are thinking, are they going to make a last-minute change? But so if you had to pick prediction-wise, I mean, who's your favorite with this giant pool?
It would be a shocker to me if Astralis didn't win this. I mean, they have performed so well throughout the year. They've won 4 out of 5 of the big events that have taken place, I think, with Na'Vi winning the other. I think maybe FaZe took one at some point, but Astralis has been on a tear. They're the only team that has held a roster consistently for as long as they have, which again, in Counter-Strike terms, even if they've been together a year, it feels like an eternity. So I'd be surprised if Astralis didn't come out of this on top. I think it's theirs to lose, and I think if they did lose, it would be a big shocker to most people. They've held the number one ranked spot for, I mean, it's been a while now, and they're coming off, you know, another event that I'm sure we'll go over in the podcast at some point, but, you know, one of the other major events that's kind of took place was the E-League premiere that just ended, and they just clean swept that as well, so I think it'd be hard-pressed to see anyone beating them.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with you too, Anuj. I'd pick Astralis, you know, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts where, especially in Counter-Strike, continuity, it's important. I mean, it's the ultimate team sport. So the continuity helps. They're coming in hot, right? They just won a tournament. So, you know, they got that going for them. And they have one of the best coach in the league as well. You know, they just have everything going for them right now.
Everything you need to be a good team, they have it.
And I also think it's difficult, too, because it's like there's not a number two right now. Like, you would say FaZe, but then
Olaf
look at what happened to them in E-League, right? Yeah, they played terrible. So there's not a number. MIBR, you have no idea what they're going to be tournament from tournament. So if I had to pick Na'Vi, again, they played pretty poorly.
Na'Vi is one of the ones that have at least done fairly well recently and showed some consistency. Mm-hmm.
But so, I crunched the numbers.
Oh, God, here it goes.
I looked at statistics. Mm-hmm. I went back and forth. Who's it going to be? Who's going to be the major winner? Well, I'm here to tell you guys, your TCR, Lock of the London Major, Cloud9. And I'm proud to be an American. Will be your first back-to-back North American major winners.
You're such a homer.
That's what you said last time. Who was right? Everyone laughed. But at the Boston Major, who was right?
I feel like we should put a bet on this one. Like, we need to think of something to have some sort of wager on this, where if Cloud9 repeats.
You know, funny you mentioned that. We are working on it right now. It's kind of difficult with a Swiss format, but we're going to have a public bracket that our listeners can join in on and make their own prediction brackets and everything there. I'm working with a website right now. We're trying to figure out how to do that with a Swiss format, though, because it's, I mean, literally every day is different games. So keep an eye, though, if you are interested in that, on Twitter, at the Center Ring. You can join our bracket. What are your predictions for the London Major? Let us know at the Center Ring. Speaking of, we are the Center Ring on the Ticket, 96.7 FM and 1310 The Ticket. I said that backwards. That was super weird, right, Matt? That was kind of weird. But we will come back, and when we return, we have... Oh, look at this. Looking back at Overwatch League Season 1 on the Ticket.
Your favorite station is talking about your favorite sport, eSports. This is the Center Ring on our Thursday night F Around on Sports Radio 1310 and 96.7 FM, The Ticket.
8:15 here on The Ticket. This is the Center Ring. As the man said, we are an eSports radio show. Follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring if you are interested, or if you're not interested. We'll take you as followers, too. We're cheap like that. At the Center Ring, we are doing a Twitter segment coming up here at 8:50. So if you have any questions, any thoughts about the upcoming CSGO Major, the Overwatch League Season 1, anything like that, any questions you might have, hit us up on Twitter. We just got done talking about that CSGO Major, though. And again, we'll do more talk on that on the actual podcast. So if you are interested, again, at the Center Ring. For right now, though, let's look back at the first season ever for Overwatch League. As we take you back to a time, this time last year, let's see, July, I think this is right around the time Dallas Fuel was announced. They were just now starting to, I think this was like right in July, August of last year, I think is when they first introduced like maybe the three teams to start the league, and then it later formed into what it is now.
I thought this was last week.
And it's crazy how in one season, how fast it can change.
Yeah.
You know, just looking back, if you went back, I think, and watched a stage one game compared to what was in the playoffs, the meta was ridiculous. I mean, for the first three stages of the league, you had the same dive comp meta.
And it was getting to the point where it was getting a little stale, and I feel like stage four was just a breath of fresh air. It's like, you know, like we're not going to see the same heroes being played.
And it really hurt a lot of teams. Like, and we can kind of mesh all of our conversation into one here, because a surprise to not only us, right, but to everyone who were trying to make predictions and sound like they knew what they were talking about, picked Dallas Fuel to be, I mean, they were, I think, going into the year top, like, second seed.
It was them, and it was, what, Shanghai, right?
No, Seoul.
Seoul, yeah, Seoul, I'm sorry.
Definitely
not Shanghai. Not Shanghai.
Seoul.
0-40 or whatever.
They were 1-2 that they were easily going to take in the league, and then they ended up being, you know, third to last when it was all said and done. And you can look back, and you can ask the players. I talked to some of the players in New York. We've had Mike on the show before. Mm-hmm. Ask anyone, and they won't hide behind the fact that, like, the comp meta was just not in their favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, part of that is, and if you want to just focus on the Dallas Fuel for a minute, we are in Dallas after all. They had a lot of tank issues, which the dive meta 90% relied on your tanks working together. It was a D.Va and it was a Winston diving in.
Right.
And when you had, you know, XQC have his issues, you finally were like, hey, hell yeah, we got OGE, so we're good. Oh, nope, he's suspended now.
Four games going into the...
It was a rough start. So you had teams that really, if they didn't adjust to the dive meta, it was around for way too long in the season for them to recover.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look, what, stage one, they were 3-7. Stage two, they were 2-8. Stage three, they were 1-9.
1-9.
So it's like
Shanghai being the only team they beat.
Yeah,
that stage.
In that stage, yeah.
And then they finally changed the comp or the meta, and then in stage four, they advanced to the playoffs because it goes into their favor.
And then, they were 6-4 in stage four. They made the playoffs. They needed now champion London to beat the Dynasty, maybe? No, it wasn't the Dynasty.
Valiant,
it
was, right? LA Valiant?
Yeah, there we go. They needed some help getting into it. But, I mean, it was nice to, you know, kind of see the meta.
And I think, though, this is one thing that I hope to see change in season two. And maybe it will. There's a thing in esports where teams fall into this trap. And this is not just Overwatch, right? This is any game, Counter-Strike, Dota, you name it. If there's a strategy involved, there's a lot of, like, monkey see, monkey do to it, right? Oh, the best team is doing this? Well, we need to do that, too. Mm-hmm. And not mix it up.
But you see that in traditional sports, too. That's not...
Right, but you also see teams mix it up. You know, look at the Tampa Bay Rays and what they're doing to their pitching. You know, they're having closers start the game and starters finish it out. So they realize, you know what, guys, we really got nothing to lose. Let's mix this up. Let's see what happens if we change this. So you have teams like the Dallas Fuel or Shanghai Dragons. Shanghai went winless. Like, you normally have to go quite a bit into a league's history before you have a winless team. And Shanghai was like...
Like, they wanted the record.
Go home.
Hold my sake.
Yeah.
I got this. because they... first year ever, they ripped the Band-Aid off and go winless. And partially because they always tried to play in the meta that they could never fit in. And I just feel like, why not mix it up? You know,
the Fuel did, right? Well, like, the Fuel made plenty of roster changes to try and make it work.
Oh, and I feel like that's something what Siegel was brought in for, but even then, eventually they just had him on D.Va, he was good. You know, he played fine with D.Va, but...
I mean, the Fuel's big... Their big MO on the Fuel was they didn't adapt until Arrow came. It was, you know, they would run that same comp, you know, over and over and over again. You know, hey, this is a dive meta. We need a Genji. We have to have a Genji.
Yeah.
Let's keep playing this Genji,
and so
even though it's not working.
I interviewed AKM, and you can find the interview on our Twitter at The Center Ring in New York, and I specifically asked him about what made you play Genji, right? And he said it wasn't Kai, their former coach. It was solely his decision because he knew all these top teams have a top-tier Genji. Somebody has to do it. I will do it. But he was not. He's a good Genji, but nowhere near
a top tier
Genji. Yeah. So it ended up hurting him, and it ended up hurting the team. Rather than, I feel like, if a team just plays to their strengths and then figure out how to counter other teams with that strength. You know, if AKM was brought in here to be a hit scanner, so you got the dive meta. Why not? And again, because you have nothing to lose at this point, right? You were second to last in the league. Why not try a Reaper, right? You stick close together as a team. They dive on you. You have a Reaper up close to destroy any Winston that jumps on you. You could maybe play McCree. You have the hit scan. You have the stun grenade to, again, counter that
slow
Winston.
Slow some of that down. Yeah.
Slow it down. But you never saw teams play with the meta. It was always... all right, this is what the top teams are doing. We're going to run this till we die.
And that was the first three stages for pretty much everybody. Like, that's just how it played out.
Yeah.
No one deviated. But
it really didn't change until stage four, where you saw Brigetta come into play.
Yeah, but that was their hand being forced to change, right, because of the changes that Overwatch made to the game.
Yeah, you're right.
It wasn't like they were like, okay, let's try something new. No, they were like, hey, the game has changed. now we will.
And we're saying this word meta a lot, and I do feel like we have non-esports listeners. I will explain real quick. So what meta is the strategy at the moment, right?
Huh?
It's what all the teams are doing to try to win. So if you want to think about it in like traditional sports sense,
it's like the spread offense in football. Like everybody was like, "Hey, this is working.
The wishbone.
Let's all
or
go
whatever.
To the spread, or the triple option,
or
whatever
the shift
it may
in
be."
Baseball.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
and all of it can change throughout the year or whatever. And with esports, a lot of it has to do with how the developers are patching their game, increasing damage, decreasing damage, changing abilities for certain heroes, and it can play a big part. I mean, it can make or break. Look at Seoul, right? The Seoul Dynasty in Korea, how that dramatically affected them. You know, you got rid of the dive meta, and all of a sudden, you know, they were defeatable. They didn't even make the playoffs.
Yeah, they were 3-7 in stage 4.
And they were, like, dominant. I mean, going into the first season of Overwatch League, it was a hands down that these guys were the best, and they were going to run away
and
with
it.
And
even early on, it was them in New York.
Yeah.
And New York was the best team. I think once the season got going, people learned really early on that New York was the best team in the league.
Yeah.
You just weren't going to beat them. They had the league's MVP, Jonak being a rookie, mind you. And I know it's the first season, so technically they're all rookies, but he's never played professionally before. So he's a true rookie. MVP, Zenyatta, and he completely changed the way you play that hero. And look at what happened to them. The playoffs start right before going into playoffs. Blizzard finally updated the Overwatch League, right? The Overwatch League was said, okay, we're going to switch to the latest patch. That way we're playing on the same patch everybody else is playing on, which is really what you should do, right?
But they should have done that from the start rather than...
Yeah, well, I mean, and there's not a good time to do it,
right?
There's really never a good time.
The playoffs,
but there's a
is
better
not-
time than doing it right before the playoffs,
starting-
right?
On the play, you know, at the playoffs, that is a bad time.
So this ended up affecting a lot of teams,
including the number one team in the league,
being New York, and the finals are in New York.
Yep.
Everyone was like, "This is going to, they're going to blow the roof off of the Barclays Center if they make the finals, right? A home team in the finals. How many times does that happen? Never.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, though, they looked like one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, we joked around as like the North American sports curse. Like, you cannot play in a championship game in your home city, you know.
Doesn't happen.
No, it just doesn't happen.
I asked a handful of the players, too, while in New York about what they felt about, you know, the patch coming in right before the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, all of them said, we knew it was going to happen, and we prepared for it. They were like, it's not like one team was at a disadvantage because we all knew with plenty of time to practice and work on it. I mean, it is the live client, so that's what they were playing anyways, right, if they weren't practicing. So they were like, we were all kind of used to it. What happened with New York, and this is what some of the players told me and from what they heard, is New York just didn't prep the way they always did. They didn't take it serious. They got lazy with their practice. They wanted to do it their way.
They were so good.
Yes.
They didn't feel like they had to.
They got
really
cocky
change.
And they slipped up.
Yeah. I mean, because like they had, like you said, Tim, they had the MVP of the league and Jonak on their team, who is this god tier Zenyatta player. But on maps, and there are several maps like this now, you know, like Junkertown, you run one, the meta right now is you run one support and then you have a flex tank player. Right, and which is usually your Zenyatta player. So this new meta change totally took that away from them. And for better or for worse, they stuck with it, and it didn't work out. It was not good for them.
One thing I hope to see, and I'd like to see this change happen for Season 2 at least, is set times where changes can be made and where it gives teams enough time to also make roster adjustments to go with those changes, right? Because when you do it right before the playoffs, you're not swapping out players at that point, even if they knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see it like after stage 1 and after stage 3. Those are the only times we can make adjustments in-game.
It would be nice. It is 8:28 here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring, an esports radio show that occasionally goes on The Ticket to talk esports and stuff. Follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. We are doing a Twitter segment coming up here at 8:50. But up next, we're going to talk about how the Overwatch League may impact other esports. 8:33 here on the ticket. This is the Center Ring, your esports radio show. Follow us on Twitter at the Center Ring if you're enjoying what you're listening to. We do a weekly podcast discussing everything esports as well. Coming up next at 8:50, we do have a Twitter segment along with some e-news, esports news. Get it? So let us know what your questions are. Whether it's, you know, maybe you're new to esports and you have questions and you want to ask. What's the saying? There's no such thing as a stupid question?
There's some.
Yeah, there are definitely
But
some.
Not here.
Oh,
not
okay.
here.
All right.
Your
this
question
is,
is not stupid to us.
Wrong.
So ask us on Twitter, at the Center Ring, if you have them.
Do you notice that the ticket is, like, not comfortable saying my name after our very first episode on?
Yeah, definitely.
It's like, Tim K with the nerds, Tim K with the gamers,
it's
Tim K with the dudes.
It's totally your fault.
I don't think there's any question that after that first time, they were like, we are never going to say this guy's
name.
We're
never trying again.
Mute Bajahaje's mic.
Let me read this 40 here, if you don't mind. The Ticket presents Girly Girl Gridiron Action with the 11th annual BVB Dallas Flag football game and fundraiser. Over 200 of Dallas's most talented, intelligent, not to mention hottest blondes and brunettes coming together to raise money to tackle Alzheimer's. Saturday, August 11th at 7 p.m. at the Cotton Bowl. Log on to bvbdallas.org for more info.
Nailed it.
Thank you. So again, this is the Center Ring on the Ticket. Follow us on Twitter at the Center Ring. Up next, we have Twitter and some e-news to knock out. But for right now, Overwatch League, they did a lot of firsts. They also did a lot of things other people have attempted. But I think they, with the organization and the money behind Blizzard, they were able to execute it at a much higher and efficient level.
I like money.
As other leagues have attempted. So I did want to spend some time and discuss with you gentlemen how you think the Overwatch League itself, right, the structure, how they ran things is going to impact whether it be Call of Duty, Dota, Fortnite, right? As Fortnite is in like its infancy as an esport, that landscape is pretty wide open.
One of the things that I think you're going to see already is the franchising. COD has already mentioned that there have been reports out there, at least, that that's the route that they plan on going for future games, which would work a little different probably in COD just because it's a yearly release, but they have already talked about going the franchising route.
And we have no idea how they're going to treat this Call of Duty.
No. No, I think...
Being that this is the first Call of Duty where they're really focusing on, like, PC as being its own individual thing, right?
It's not like a port-over game.
It could be completely different on how they handle... Like, yes, you're going to see other Call of Duties just because that's how the contracts work out with...
Treyarch and all these guys.
Sledgehammer and all that, but this might be the one where it sticks as, okay, this is the preferred competitive Call of Duty. But I do think... You know, franchising, if we want to stay on that for a little bit, will be really interesting to see how other games adapt it. One advantage that Overwatch League had is that they never really had a true establishment by the developers, right? You saw tournaments for Overwatch, but it was always just kind of tournament ran. It was never Blizzard backed up.
Yeah.
Right?
Which you see in a lot of esports. That's pretty common.
Yeah.
Where it's like tournament. Organized
ESL, DreamHack, anything along those lines. It's never, not never, but most of the time it's not official company backed up by the people who made the game.
Yeah.
And everyone knew that Overwatch League was coming, so everyone knew that's why Blizzard never really focused on their main tournaments other than the World Cup that they had at, you know, BlizzCon every year.
Which was more of a fun event than anything.
So they had the advantage of, like, there was no other... Like, teams were easier to adapt to the franchise mode, where, like, in Call of Duty or League of Legends is even moving towards this. You're upsetting a lot of people where it's like, well, what happened? Like, you had Cinderella stories that could qualify for these leagues, and relegations were involved, and pro points, and all this, and now you're taking away that format.
But that's where somebody else can step up and... evolve that system, right? And come up with different ideas on how to incorporate some of those up-and-coming teams or you know, there's different ways to do it, but I think people can at least take this idea that Blizzard has and see how they've implemented it and then tweak it and make it their own, right? It doesn't have to be exactly the same, but I think the idea of franchising is a good one. I mean, I don't have anything against it, I guess.
Yeah, so I think franchising is probably the biggest thing that, you know, other leagues will take from this, but another is schedule, right? I mean, these guys have a legit off season now where they play a season for 7 months and then they have an off season and they'll be back into it in December when season two comes around. And, you know, we can build off of, there was a conversation we had with Mike Hastro. He's the Dallas Fuel's owner, where there are esports like Counter-Strike where it's so involved. There's something happening every weekend.
It's just so saturated with tournaments.
It's saturated and it's hard to monetize.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this is something that I hope because, you know, Counter-Strike is everyone's favorite. I mean, that is the esport, and I want to see it succeed, but getting them to change that part of their business is going to be difficult.
Part of that is, I think, because of the salaries in Counter-Strike makes it so difficult. Like, the salaries are so outrageous to where if you go to a seasoned format and you have 3 or 4 months off, you can't pay somebody $600K to play half the year, right? And then these are the types of salaries you're seeing for some of these guys, $500,000 plus.
I think,
you know,
though, one of the selling points for franchises, and not to the fans, right? We don't really benefit one way or the other unless you're just looking at fandom. It's always kind of cooler to root for a Dallas team. Is the money that the owners get from being franchised. You have profit sharing involved there, and every owner kind of has a voice. For the owner's point of view, that is definitely like their preferred method. And especially when you start seeing, and they're predicting near the year 2020 for Overwatch League, is home and away games, right? It's really difficult to have home and away games if it's not franchised with the city backing it. Look at our local teams. You have the Dallas Fuel for Overwatch League is owned by Team Envy, who has teams in other areas, but it's not necessarily, if you're from Dallas, you might not have necessarily ever rooted for them unless you knew that Dallas tie-in.
Yeah.
So when you're starting to do home and away like the Overwatch League is, now that has never been done before in esports.
And how cool would it be, you know, if I were to take my two boys over to, you know, it's like, hey boys, you know, you want to go and watch, you want to go watch the Fuel play the Outlaws? They're playing at the AAC. Let's go, you know? I mean, that's...
I feel like that's just to get it closer to mainstream sports, right? Like, for us, it wouldn't affect Brett's viewing experience in the sense of he's going to watch either way,
regardless,
right? Like, Brett's
going
to watch it whether it's online or it's in his backyard. But building a local brand, having some tie to a team, gets those non-esports people a little bit more involved because, hey, it's something to do on a Friday night or something to take your kids to that they're interested in, a way to have a different bonding experience with your kid or whatever it may be.
Well, and I think it also adds, like, it legitimizes it for the non-esports fan. There were a lot of people, like I mentioned, at the Grand Finals in Brooklyn who had never been to an esports event, have never watched Overwatch or let alone know there was a league going on, but then when they went into a sold out Barclays Arena and saw 20,000 fans all cheering on these guys, and it's like any other sporting event at that moment. You know, you have them cheering for if something good happens, they're booing the teams they don't like. I think for those people who are on the fence of like, this esports thing isn't a thing, you know, my son does this on the couch every day, I think it's really going to open their eyes and be like, oh, maybe I'm the one outside looking in.
I'm lagging behind a little bit.
There's no... The question of, is esports coming? That's not a question anymore. It definitely is here.
It's a billion-dollar industry. It's here.
There's money there to prove it. And I think when you start seeing these home and away teams or the games, you're going to definitely see, as Anuj said, that more traditional fan maybe gear more towards it. I'm not saying that all of a sudden they're going to be like, well, okay, you guys are right. Esports is real because now they have a stadium. But I think it is going to be easier to convince your buddy, hey, I have tickets. You want to just go hang out at this thing for a couple hours?
Yeah.
You know? Like you do with normal sports, right? How many times do you invite a friend just to go to a basketball game or a baseball game. Sometimes it's what you do.
Yeah.
Other things that have kind of, well, we've already kind of talked about it a little bit, but the TV deals. We have about a minute. So briefly, they did sign a deal with ESPN, Overwatch League did. This is not the first time. This is not groundbreaking by any means. You have E-League on TBS and Turner TV. You have had esports on ESPN2 before. It's not groundbreaking. Now, the numbers, the ratings for Overwatch League, they're pretty pitiful. Like, I don't think there's
no way around it. They're bad.
The numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
And there's no way to really spin it unless you are it all depends on what side of the fence you're on, right? If you're into esports, we're going to say, well, it doesn't really matter because that's not where the target clientele is, right? Your target market is people online watching it on Twitch or streams and things like that.
But it's the business side that matters
Business, right. This is all about business when it's coming to TV.
They want to find a way to make as much money as possible and kind of need TV to go to that next level. These TV deals are where a lot of these leagues make their money. And I think it wasn't a good start, but I don't think it's the end either.
Yeah, no. And that's going to come with time. It's the first year of the league. You got most of your viewership watching on Twitch. They've been watching on Twitch all season. So, I mean, they'll eventually get there. And when there's more home at home and it's advertised, you see billboards and everything like that. Yeah, you know, for the non-traditional esports fan, you're going to see that stuff and say, "Hey, you know what? I'm gonna turn on Fox Southwest and you know."
And the check reality out the is Fuel you don't know Outlaws. How the home and away is going to work. Are local teams going to have local deals with Fox Sports?
Yeah.
So then you're going to see more advertising there. As far as the TV and esports goes, yes, there's a long way to go. I know, and I'm not even sure if it even matters at this point because, again, we watch everything. Us millennials watch everything online anyway. So it doesn't really, I don't know if it has that huge of impact. But nonetheless, the Overwatch League, it is changing a lot of how your landscape of your traditional esports is working out. It is 8:46 here on The Ticket. We are the Center Ring. Up next, we do have e-news and our very own Twitter segment. So if you have any questions at The Center Ring on Twitter, hit it up. Welcome back to The Center Ring here on The Ticket. It's 8:53 on this Wednesday night around. We are The Center Ring. This is the last... Thank you. This is the last segment of the show. So if you enjoyed it, I'm sorry. If you are really looking forward to the top 10, I'm also sorry. But good news is we're almost done. We are going to do some Twitter questions coming up here in a little bit, so hit us up on Twitter, at The Center Ring. If you haven't followed us already, go ahead and do that. I am Tim K, weekend ticket extraordinaire. Alongside me are my best buds. We got Brett. Say hello.
Hello.
And we have Anuj.
Hello, hello.
And of course, Matt's been in here making us sound good. Let's get into some e-news, though, shall we? And if you are new to the show, this is not entertainment news. It's just a ripoff and using the same bed. But it's just, you know, esports, news, e-news.
I get it.
Super creative.
Oh, yeah.
Super it works. Creative. It works.
So what do we got?
So first we have with CSGO, we just finished up one of the bigger events of the year. It's the E-League premiere. E-League is also on TBS. You probably see it on TV from time to time. But that's a million-dollar tournament that just came to an end. And as you heard some of us choose earlier today, the Wizards on the show that know quite a bit. Astralis, the team we picked to win the London Major, came away with a win here at the E-League Premier. Walked out with $500K in their pockets. So not a bad few weeks worth of work there for them. And followed up by Liquid on that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the big takeaways there is Liquid getting second place. And like, was it? The day of the semis where they qualified for the finals, Taco's dad
passed away.
Passed away.
Yep.
He played that day. They won, and then he went to the finals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's man, heartbreaking for him because Taco's one of the better guys in the scene in general. Obviously, you don't want to see that happen to anybody. But with Taco,
I can think of a few.
You know, Taco is just one of the better guys in the scene. We've had a couple of chances to speak with him and good dude. You hate to see something like that happen. They played their hearts out for him, but they fell short to You know, I mean, no shame. The best team in the game right now is Strawless. So, again, they still walked away with 200K for second place, so can't be complaining too much, I would think.
Speaking of ridiculous prize money here, though, makes that 200K look like chump change. Update on the international Dota 2 prize pool.
Oh, gosh, here we go.
At the moment, 22,930,000.
And, like, first place walks away with, what, like, 15 million or so out of that,
right.
Roughly?
It's a pretty penny. They still have, like, 15 days until they shut off the... You can buy, like, I don't know what you would call it.
Like a prize pack for the game that essentially gives you, like, in-game items. And
you can buy a souvenir pack and the money goes to the winning and all that. So it blows up every year.
Yeah, and every year it's huge.
One thing, and it's a point I didn't make about the Overwatch League, which I think proves volume to how they finally built this home-based, city-based league. Throughout the whole season, throughout the whole grand finals, all you ever talked about or heard was them winning the championship. You never once
money.
Brought up the prize pool.
Yeah.
Which was good.
It was a million,
way.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just as big as a Counter-Strike Major or the International, but those are always quickly followed up with the prize pool. Overwatch League, not once.
Yeah.
It was refreshing.
With the Dota, it's a little... With the International, I should say, it's a little different just because that is...
It's part of it.
What makes it such a grand event.
It is the Super Bowl of Dota by far, and it's... I know people that don't even play Dota, but they will watch the TI every year because of the festivities Valve puts into it.
The 3D holograms on stage.
Yes,
and just,
every
it's pretty insane.
They
go all out.
They hold nothing back. So the TI is always, always marked on my calendar. I know, Anuj, you were talking in the pregame show about Call of Duty beta.
Yeah, Call of Duty beta actually for PS4 launches this weekend, exclusive for PS4 this weekend, and then I believe next weekend it goes live on all platforms, including Xbox and PC.
All we care about is PC.
Yep, coming to PC.
Starts next week. The beta starts next week.
If
play on
you
PS4
pre-order,
or Xbox.
You get it a day early. If you want to wait to try it out, which we always recommend doing, you can play it for free for 2 days when the open beta launches next weekend. So
it's been a while since I've been excited for a Call of Duty game. I bought the latest one, World War II. It was okay.
We enjoyed it for quite some time.
We did. But at the same time, it's on a console.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel...
Something feels wrong. Yeah.
To play on a console. So the fact that they're finally creating dedicated servers for Call of Duty on PC, man.
If you're trying to play it on PC, it is on Blizzard's app, so you can...
Battle.net.
Battle.net. Just go download it on there.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll even play with you. Maybe you can play with worldwide esports celebrities.
Who? Oh.
Us. He's talking about
nice.
Us.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tim
yeah.
K.
In other esports news, EVO 2018, this weekend, August 3rd through the 5th. This is by far one of the biggest fighting game tournaments of the year, for those of you who don't know. It's also a big one marked on a lot of people's calendars. This is one where you will see on, they've had it on ESPN in the past, the Street Fighter. They've had that on ESPN, I believe it was for EVO. It could have been for just the... Street Fighter Pro League finals. Now
is
that
it
I'm
E-League?
Well, E-League does Street Fighters all the time, but I'm talking on ESPN.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure they've had EVO. I could be making that up. It might have been just the Street Fighter Pro League finals, but no way anyone can prove me wrong. So
yeah.
I'm okay with that. This year, though, speaking of Street Fighter, it has been dethroned.
Mm.
It is no longer the most attended game at EVO. Dragon Ball FighterZ dethroned Street Fighter.
Sad.
First time in years that it's happened. Dragon Ball FighterZ is having, get this, 2,575 attendees.
Like,
those
participants?
In the tournament.
That's crazy.
In the tournament, you have over 2,500 people. Like, that's why EVO is the biggest event of the year. It's in Vegas, so it's already, you know, popping up from that. But, like, the winner of these tournaments, you fought through a 2,500 pool of players. Could you imagine?
It's like winning the World Series of Poker, basically.
Yeah. I mean, imagine going into, like, another one-man sport, you know, golf. or tennis, where one tournament had over 2,500 people that you had to
I feel like you would die through. If it was tennis.
Yeah, I mean, it probably wouldn't bode well.
It wouldn't be a one weekend thing.
And even then, like, it did beat out Street Fighters, but Street Fighter had 2,484.
So right behind it.
Right behind it. Overall competitors at Evo 2018, this is throughout the 8 games that they are hosting there, 7,437.
So there's a pretty good amount.
It's a decent amount of people, man. People fly all over the world to play at Evo in Vegas every year. So it is a big tournament. And another big tournament in its own right. The PUBG Global Invitational happened over the weekend. Don't care about the third-person perspective tournament. And you can't convince me otherwise. But the first-person perspective ended up happening. OMG, a Chinese team, ended up taking first place handedly. Even by the first day, out of the 4 matches played on day 1, they didn't get first in one of them, and it was second place.
Yeah.
So that's
with a high number of kills, too.
Exactly.
It's not like
one of those
were
in game 4 dropping 20 kills.
Yeah.
I mean, you're done. They were 2 wins ahead of the second place team going into day 2.
Google their training facility. OMG Chinese training facility. Just Google that and see what these guys are working with over there. I mean, it looks like some
space
out of this world
stuff.
Type stuff. I mean, yeah. It's a really, really neat facility that they have there.
Let's get into some Twitter questions, though, shall we? We do have a handful to get to, mainly all revolving around Dallas Fuel, which is okay, because you know what? We're in Dallas, and
we love the Fuel.
That's part of it. Johnny Garbanzo asks, how does the Fuel fix their team? Anything positive to look forward to next season? Honestly, I think what you saw in Stage 4 was they already fixed the team. Like, they knew what was wrong, and they adjusted.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Raphael made the change. Bringing in Arrow helps. You know, you got that guy that can kind of change on the fly. He is also Team USA's head coach. So yep. He's got some skins on the wall, and that was the biggest change. And then also, you know, we'll see if the meta continues.
You don't
into
know. That's the question everyone's asking is, it's a long time. I assume season 2 is going to start in January, like, you know, this season did. So it's a lot can change with patch updates and everything between now and season 2.
The Fuel just need a fresh start. Like, it just needs to be a rewind and, like, let's just start over. And I really think they'll be fine with the team they have. And
I don't think you're going to see a lot of changes. I know the roster free agency, I guess if you want to call it that, started today. Open negotiation for players to re-sign with teams and for teams to sign other players started today. I don't think the Fuel is going to really be one of those teams that mix a lot up because the way they ended the season.
Well, like, and they changed a lot during the season, right?
They worked really hard to get that chemistry to where it is now. I think mixing it up, unless it's just the team goes to the ownership and says, look, this one guy is the issue. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot there as far as roster moves.
Don't bring back XQC. That would be
the
first advice.
I don't think you'll have to worry about that. I will be shocked if he is picked up on another team.
Ever.
Even with these expansion teams coming out.
Yeah. He's on Team Canada for the World Cup.
Yeah, but that is
but
that's like a for fun.
It's partially voted in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's not a...
Yeah.
That's one tournament you got to worry about him. Uh-huh.
They can't suspend
him for that, right?
Not 7 months.
He'll find a way.
You will think.
He'll find a way.
Oh, here is this. At Mr. Birmingham asks, during these tournaments, how often do they allow breaks for snacks? That's a very good question, Matt.
Thank you.
And to be honest, depending on what tournament it is, they might be there for a couple hours.
So no snacks.
No snacks.
No snacks for you.
No snacks. Now, normally, there's like a halftime or a break time, and they run back and get a banana.
There's a little juice box.
But
you get all the energy drink sponsors you want, though. So if it's a Monster event or something, you'll have 50 of those lined up next to you.
Yeah, they will shove Monsters down your throat.
Drew asks, thoughts on Effect returning to the Fuel for Season 2?
Would be nice. We just don't know what his mental state is. And, I mean, This is a guy who, before he left, was second in damage per 10 minutes in the league. Second. And you can talk about meta change. I think his game can translate to whatever. I mean, he's that good, so I hope he comes back. The league is better.
I think he's going to come. He has even stated himself he's coming back. You can see him on Twitch. He hasn't lost anything. The dude is unreal.
Yeah, he's amazing.
When he's streaming. Is he going to come back to the Fuel? I mean, obviously, I think if you're the Dallas Fuel, you're going to take him back, I would assume. He's a top player in the league. You're obviously going to take your shot with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and it's difficult to say because you don't know why he went home, right?
Yeah,
was he homesick? Was he sick? Was something going on in the family? So it's difficult to judge him for that. It seems like none of the players or anyone has had an issue with it, so it's got to be something where they thought they couldn't fix.
And that's where the likelihood of him coming back to the Fuel comes into play, because everyone we've talked to, you talked to AKM and OGE in New York. They were supportive of the move. They didn't make him feel bad about making that, you know, transition back to Korea and just getting his mind right. So I think that helps.
Yeah.
For him coming back. We miss you. We miss you, Effect.
He could also join a full Korean roster, though. And
don't say that, Tim. That
there's like a new team coming up over there, isn't there?
Ruin our dreams. There's rumors. Yeah. No one knows yet for sure. But that about does it for us here at The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports radio show. Aaron Hill, real quick, asks adjustment you would make in the Overwatch League for the future. I would say the schedule, which will probably fix itself in home and away games. Thank you again, everyone, for listening to The Ticket, to The Center Ring. We love you. We adore you. For all the nice things said on Twitter, again, you can hit us up there at The Center Ring. We do a weekly episode, a weekly podcast that you can hear everything. I want to thank Blizzard and the Overwatch League again for thinking of us and inviting me out there to attend the event in real life. It was amazing.
We really all three loved it.
Thank you again to The Ticket for allowing us schmucks to do our thing and talk esports on the radio. It is always a lot of fun. Thank you to Matt. Thank you, Anuj. Thank you, Brett. This is Tim, The Center Ring, at The Center Ring on Twitter, and we'll see you guys next time.